This is undeniable. Now I'm going to play these. Let's go through them because I think it's important for people to hear and see that might not have seen it. Now, a couple of these you've already seen on the show, but the vast majority I have not played on the show. So what we're going to show you is how many doctors, and this is just some, there's so many more out there, and I'm going to grab, if you see new ones, send it to me. I'm going to put it in this thread. I started it by saying, how many doctors returning from Gaza telling you that Israel is deliberately targeting children do you need to see or hear before something shifts? Now, then it went on to make it more than just targeting children, just genocide, murdering people, mutilation. So let's play some of these. I know some of this is hard to listen to, but I want you guys to hear this. Please share this. Get this reach in spite of the warning of sensitive content. We're going to start with the one that you've seen. This one kills me every time because of how emotional he gets as a veteran doctor who has been through this.
End of April for the first couple of weeks. And then there's sniper bullets. I have children that were shot twice.
Wait, you're saying that children in Gaza are being shot by snipers?
Definitively. I have two children that I have photographs of that were shot so perfectly in the chest I couldn't put my stethoscope over their heart more accurately, and directly on the side of the head in the same child. No toddler gets shot twice by mistake by the world's best sniper. And they're dead center shots.
In fact, more than 20 doctors recently in Gaza also told Sunday Morning about gunshot wounds to children. One American doctor told us he even reviewed CT scans to confirm what he saw because he, quote, didn't believe that this many children could be admitted to a single hospital with gunshot wounds to the head. Some shootings have been captured on video.
So, of all the disaster zones you've seen, how does Gaza compare?
All of the disasters I've seen combined, 40 mission trips, 30 years, ground zero, earthquakes, all of that combined doesn't equal the level of carnage that I saw.
Think about that statement. They all have the same point. Every other thing he's ever seen in his entire career combined does not equal what he saw in Gaza. And we're supposed to dismiss this. We're supposed to ignore this. We're supposed to not give this. I mean, this is bombshell. If this was about Iran or Russia or China or Venezuela, it would be everywhere, but not on Twitter, not on the free speech haven, not on any, I mean, this was even done by a mainstream report. And yet here we are. Every government that needs to hear, still supporting, still arming, still gaslighting. Every single person running in this pretend election that's supposed to be, they're all supporting the genocidal entity that's doing this. We're still giving them bombs and money. And I mean, my God, let's not forget about the ridiculous the pier, the game they did where they built a pier under the guys they were going to bring food in. They conducted an operation that deliberately targeted and murdered civilians. And then they brought it, they were done. And now the pier is gone. It's just so stupidly obvious. These people are trying to tell you.
Against civilians in just my first week in Gaza.
And when you say civilians, is it mostly children?
Almost exclusively children.
Almost exclusively. That needs to resonate. This is a war on children. And I don't mean that because all wars affect children more, because they do. I mean, this is a deliberate, targeted war on children as one part of an extermination campaign. That's what this is.
I've never seen that before. Never seen that. I've seen more incinerated children than I've ever seen in my entire life combined. I've seen more shredded children in just the first week.
Shredded?
Shredded.
What do you mean?
Missing body parts, being crushed by buildings, the greatest majority, or bomb explosions, the next greatest majority. We've taken shrapnel as big as my thumb out of 8-year-olds.
The UN reports that to date, more than 80% of Gaza's population has been displaced and the majority of its buildings destroyed. A reality which has taken its own toll on the well-being of children.
What about the emotional wounds?
How can you measure that? I can't measure my own. How do you be an orphan and watching your family, you know, melted in front of you. And
I swear, it gets me every time. I just say, see somebody like that break down. Like, imagine what he must be going through. I mean, and this person has to see it. let alone imagine what they're dealing with in Gaza, that it makes this man almost cry, despite being involved in, you know, in many war fields of war, in earthquakes, in Ground Zero. And yet he almost breaks down in tears because of what he's describing. It kills me that people can ever act like this is not the most, that people are dismissing this online. What, am I supposed to just listen to doctors? It's unbelievable to me. And I'm not saying blindly trust anybody, but to pretend like this compilation of information, along with everything else we've seen, is not absolutely definitive is unbelievable to me.
Write it in front of you. How do you fix that? Ever fix that?
In fact, so many Palestinian children have had family members killed that doctors created a shorthand term, WCNSF, wounded child, no surviving family.
Every single part of the hospital has been destroyed. The whole infrastructure of the hospital has been destroyed. When I spoke to Marwan yesterday, he told me there were 107 patients still in the hospital, 60 medical staff. God only knows what has happened to them. I think we've seen some of the pictures. Surgeons I know have been executed in the last 48 hours there. Bodies have been discovered in the last 12 to 24 hours who have been handcuffed. Every single part of the hospital has been destroyed. The whole infrastructure of the hospital has been destroyed. When I spoke to Marwan yesterday, he told me there were 107 patients still in the hospital, 60 medical staff. God only knows what has happened to them. I think we've seen some of the pictures. Surgeons I know have been executed in the last 48 hours there. Bodies have been discovered in the last 12 to 24 hours who have been handcuffed with their arms behind their back. And so there is no doubt at all that multiple healthcare workers have been executed there in the last few days.
You believe executed by whom, Doctor?
By the Israeli Defence Force.
Why would they seek to execute surgeons and medical professionals?
Well, they've been doing it since October the 7th. Over 450 healthcare workers have been killed. Friends of mine that I have worked with over the years, many have been abducted as well, and nothing has been heard of them since. So there is no doubt in my mind, and I can bear witness from this from my time at Al-Aqsa Hospital and from talking to people, that there's been direct targeting of the healthcare system in Gaza, direct targeting of hospitals, and multiple killings of healthcare workers.
Any death is tragic, but this is not, and I say again, anyone dying in any sense. So this is not, and please don't be upset by this expression, collateral damage. This is specifically targeted, you're saying, medical professionals by the IDF to be taken off and executed, is your belief?
Most certainly, that is my belief.
Have you at any time seen anything that would lead you to believe that there had been terrorists who were hiding in the hospital?
Without exception, every single one has responded to say they have never witnessed any Hamas militant in the hospitals they have worked in.
I said, unreal. That goes back to Al-Shifa Hospital. So right now, if you're watching this, take a moment and share this out. We're going to keep going through these, and I want this to catch people's attention. Right now is a good moment to take a break and share this out to people, because they're going to tap into this in a live feed and watch these people talking about this. We may just catch new people despite the censorship and suppression. So take a moment and get that reach out there. Share it from the bottom of any platform you're on, from the website itself. Get this out there. Let's play another one.
If you can think of something bad that is happening in the world, it's happening in Gaza or to people from Gaza. The things that I saw there that really stood out or really, really impacted me and made me realize what's actually going on were a few. Number one was the malnutrition and starvation, which is deliberate. That's perfectly obvious. Even American senators are giving speeches saying that it's deliberate. The second thing was the targeting of children with gunfire. That I was not expecting to see, actually. I knew how many children had been killed. I knew about the massive killing in general, but I just assumed it was all from bombings. But that doesn't explain children getting shot in the head. Oh boy, that doesn't explain children getting shot in the head, and definitely not every day. I mean, literally every day I was there, I saw a child shot in the head. I kept the journal when I was there, and I just went through it because some reporters asked me to. And like, quite literally every day I was there, I saw a child shot in the head. That's not an accident.
And again, as the other one said, almost exclusively children. shredded, smashed, shot in the head twice with sniper bullets. I mean, how much of this people need to hear to actually recognize this is a deliberate action? This is not side effect. This is not a byproduct. This is the direction. Sort of like we now found out that human shields is not an accident. It's not an individual choice. It is a systematic order coming down from the top. You know, like we've all been telling you, if you've been paying attention. This is a very problematic thing, guys. This is the issue of our time. What these entities are doing outside of their country, let alone to Gaza, is monumental. I've been saying this for a long time. We'll remember this for centuries. We'll be talking about this for a very long time. But what we need to focus on is the influence from outside the country, what they're doing to other countries to allow this. Ask yourself how this was ever allowed to be this way for 75 years. That you just didn't know these things that are all, oh my God, it's right there. It's on the United Nations. It's on Wikipedia for crying out loud. I don't see that because there's been a controlled manipulation. We're still living in it, but it is breaking down as we speak. Get this in front of people.
It's deliberate targeting of children for death. That's murder.
The injury patterns I've seen most consistently are things like crush injuries as a result of Israeli airstrikes on homes. Between 60 to 70% of those injured and those who make it to the hospital are actually children. I can tell you that I have seen injuries that indicate deliberate targeting of children and deliberate targeting of civilians. So I've seen things like gunshot wounds to the abdomen of children, to the chest. I have documented evidence of gunshot wounds to the extremities of babies, quadcopter attacks on children, gunshot wounds to the chest of children. I saw things like Israeli landmines exploding on children who were playing in a cemetery. So the injury patterns and the things that you see as a doctor are quite horrifying, more so than the first time around. I think the second mission, the injuries have been a lot worse and a lot more catastrophic and devastating.
Now, this one you've seen, I think I've got a couple from her, but she's been speaking about this from the beginning.
The emergency department at Al-Aqsa Hospital is a complete bloodbath. It looks like a slaughterhouse. The images and videos that I've received show patients lying on the floor everywhere in pools of blood with missing extremities because their limbs have been blown off. Parents running around covered in soot, carrying their children who have blood running from their head, trying to find a healthcare provider to treat them. But it's so chaotic, and there are so many patients. When they were told to evacuate what was considered a safe zone, Rafah, they were told, no, go to Al-Mawasi, go to Deir al-Balah. And so about a million of them did. It is a utter and complete massacre, and I do not know how you could see the footage we're seeing, hear the stories we're hearing, and not be absolutely convinced that this is a genocide that needs to be stopped immediately.
It's an avalanche of human suffering that's 100% man-made. It is the worst humanitarian catastrophe I've experienced in my lifetime and in my growingly long career in humanitarian medicine. And it's burning through the hearts of every single humanitarian that I know. You know, I'm going to paint a picture for you of the degree of suffering that we're seeing. People keep asking me about medical aid and hospitals and the situation of the hospitals. The entire hospital healthcare system collapsed almost a week ago. It was announced on TV for the whole world to see. And in that week, there has been indiscriminate bombardment. And I don't even know if indiscriminate is the right term, because it's targeting healthcare facilities, ambulances, churches, mosques, schools, refugee camps, densely populated refugee camps, wiping out entire families in a second, entire multi-generational extended families in a second. There are almost 1,000 families in the Gaza Strip who have had at least two members of their family, at least two members killed in the last 3 weeks. There are almost 4,000 children who have been killed and identified, excluding almost 1,000 children whose bodies are still trapped under the rubble. Some of them may be alive for a long period before they ultimately die under the rubble. And I'm sorry if there are any young, you know, children watching this. Perhaps this is a good time to ask them to leave the room. But I think it's important that I paint a picture, particularly when I'm following a news narrative that almost dismisses this avalanche of suffering that is unprecedented in modern times. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an acronym in the Gaza Strip right now. You know, I'm a pediatric intensive care doctor. I see a lot of suffering in my career. There's an acronym that is unique to the Gaza Strip, and it's WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. Children, and it is used not infrequently in the last 3 weeks. It was coined in the last three weeks. One physician told me a few days ago that a little girl came in wounded, and she had a piece of paper in her pocket that she handed to him. He sent me a picture of the piece of paper. It had 27 names on it, and she said, "These are the members of my family that were with me in my home. Please look for them. Please look for them under the rubble. Don't look for this one," and she points to the name of her sister. "I know she's already dead." This is a 10-year-old little girl. Wounded Child, No Surviving Family should not exist as an acronym. And to follow President Biden as he continues to justify and to warmonger. All I can say is this has to stop. It's a collective stain on our humanity. It's a stain on our collective humanity.
Tanya, and let me ask you, you paint such a vivid and horrific picture. You really do. And I understand that these are your friends who you've worked with and how difficult that must be. You're not alone. I've been hearing today from reading testimony today from Philip Lazzarini, who's the Commissioner General of UNRWA. He's been speaking to the UN Security Council. He said this: the sanitary conditions are appalling. People live on very little bread and whatever is left of some water. 70 of their staff members have been killed, and they are looking after 670,000 people in their refugee centres. Is there any sign from what you're hearing that of a humanitarian pause or pauses that could be negotiated?
I'm not a politician, but the word pause to me makes no sense. You know, you pause to nourish and hydrate a population before you kill them. It just doesn't make any sense for me. You stop the bombardment. That is what the entire global community should be pushing for and should be insisting on. You know, and I think in leading up to my introduction, I think you interviewed somebody who said something very similar, a Gazan who said something very similar. You know, the priority is not giving us aid. You need to stop the indiscriminate bombardment. So I think, yes, what is needed is a humanitarian truce or a ceasefire, global intervention, things that were voted for by the overwhelming majority of countries on this planet a few days ago in the General Assembly of the United Nations, yet they're not adhered to.
And remember, this was the framework that was voted on, that it was agreed to, that Israel has now multiple times broken. And that's why Hamas is no longer even coming to these conversations, because they're acting like the agreement is going towards a ceasefire, but it's not. And this is openly discussed by people in Israel, I'll show you next.
And are completely disregarded by the powers that be. Two powers, to be specific.
Mm-hmm. When we have a lot of cases in hospitals, you can talk to every doctor about how there are a lot of patients that die due to unknown infections. We don't know what's going on to them, and we cannot really test them because we don't have the labs and we don't have the equipment. We don't have even the specialized people that are required to tackle these issues. When foreign doctors incinerate their clothing because they're afraid to spread diseases to their home countries, that should raise a lot of questions. They only identified polio this time, but I'm sure there are a lot of organisms that will cause a lot of havoc.
He seems to be suggesting this is deliberate, and I agree. I think it's an easy thing to prove that they've at least allowed the problem to grow because they knew that would hurt them. But I argue, as Robert does, that it seems that there are deliberate actions being taken to actually make this happen. Whether it's polio or whatever else we're talking about, whatever you think is happening, they're making them sick. And I think that's easy to see. Now think about that from the context of a, you know, pandemic conversation. Weren't they just telling us that one case is too many? But now it's like, who cares? We don't care about them. Let it go. Like, just, they don't care about anything always. And I'm talking about the establishment, not just one side or the other. It's like any other conversation. The thing they swore was the most important yesterday no longer matters today because of the new direction.
Everywhere, and we just can't do anything about it. And I'm really tired of watching patients die because of things that I really cannot control. In no time, these infections will spread everywhere. They will not be limited to Gaza. We should do something about it.
As you mentioned, I went on a five-week medical mission, and we established a field hospital on the border of Khan Yunis and Rafah. And, you know, Ayman, as soon as you get there, you realize the level of devastation is magnitudes more than what you expect from watching news footage and social media coverage. Nothing that I've had in my training really could prepare me for the level of atrocities that I witnessed, the types of mass casualty incidents that we were managing day in and day out, 60, 70 patients coming in at a time where we had to color code them to determine who we could really invest our scarce resources in trying to resuscitate, working with very depleted inventory of medications, supplies, equipment, having to do surgery with limited anesthetics. For the first over a month, we were only using ketamine to provide analgesia, and all this to say that we were opening patients' abdomens and trying to resect intestines that were damaged by shrapnel and gunshot wounds.
We're going to get to that point in a second about, and we've talked about this many times over the years, using Abby Martin's work in regard to butterfly bullets, and God only knows what else they're using today, which are all, I mean, whether it's white phosphorus or any kind of other munitions they're using, they're designed to maximize suffering, which is why they've been outlawed and banned in warfare or anywhere else. Now, white phosphorus being a small exception in the context of how they allow, but it's abused in the same way. They pretend it's for signaling, and then they use it over civilians during the day. It's ridiculous. The point is that all of this is clear. All of it's going in the same direction.
The multitude of children that I saw, I've never seen so many dead children in my entire life. And there's a disproportionate effect on the number of children that came through the emergency department, both in terms of shrapnel injuries from missile strikes, but also direct targets of quadcopter gunshot wounds, gunshots. I pulled bullets out of, you know, 3-month-old thigh. I pulled bullets out of a young man's shoulder, a 13-year-old boy's shoulder who was sleeping in his tent, an 8-year-old girl shot in the abdomen as she was playing outside her tent.
It's just unreal, right? All this stuff is just, this is the same across every one of them. Not examples where you're like human shields or tunnels. No, they're just sleeping in their tent, playing outside with their friends, got shot in the abdomen. You think that's by accident when you can see that they've been shot twice or killed with two shots to the head as a little infant that was like, I mean, it's the kind of stuff that we should not even have to be talking about. These people are the villains of our time.
And this became bread and butter for me as an emergency physician. It was not only heartbreaking, we're trained to take care of anyone and everyone and to acknowledge right. Our collective humanity. And it was
another tough day today with significant injuries coming in, gunshot wounds again, trauma from shelling and bombs. Saw a lot of kids, unfortunately, today with deep lacerations, head trauma, skull fractures.
Every single one of them. How can we deny that?
Open fractures with vascular injuries, gunshots penetrating certain parts of limb, which are very specifically directed to maim individuals to cause them the worst amount of pain possible. Because of the border that's been closed, the medical supplies or the supplies in general, what used to trickle in is not coming through. The instrumentations that we have are poor quality, even to the point that trying to suture with stitches and so on, the needles are not sharp. It causes more pain to penetrate just through the skin. Sterilization is not there, unfortunately. I don't know if you just heard there was a bomb that went off just recently, just as I am speaking. But the people are still in good spirits. There was some respite. People were watching the Champions League match between Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. People were cheering. a bit of a break from the daily physical and psychological trauma that they are going through. People, you know, they are so amazing with such a good heart. As I was leaving,
This is also something that we keep hearing. Imagine being in this position and then still having compassion, right? I mean, think about how the resilience of these people is inspiring in countless ways.
The circulating nurses was eating a small meal, and he offered his last piece of bread, last piece of pita bread, to me. And he insisted that I take it. He insisted that I ate a small morsel from his own plate. Subhanallah, these are the people the Zionist genocidal force is hell-bent on massacring. Mm-hmm. All the Western governments and the Muslim governments are in cahoots with this genocidal Zionist force. They're complicit in the slaughter of our children. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will never forgive these people. Now I ask upon the Muslim armies, where are you? Where is your izzah? Where is the honor? Where is your responsibility to defend this ummah? How will you continue to watch this and answer in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The hukam...
Basically, how will you answer to God? Right? How are you going to face... You know, depending on what your beliefs are, right? When that time comes, how are you going to act like you did? I mean, I think people that are in this position aren't even considering that. Or, I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, for those that care, that's something you should consider if you're out there acting like this isn't happening.
We want to leave, but we cannot. We might not survive until the morning.
I mean, you got to realize these are doctors that have seen, they've been there, they've done that, right? They've seen these things, and these people are breaking down.
On the first day I was there in Al-Aqsa Hospital, we were in a small trauma bay in the ER. And when the first mass casualty, which was one of almost one every day I was there, occurred, and we could hear the bombs in the distance, and we knew that about 45 minutes later, people would come in pieces. That children would be carried in pieces by their loved ones on donkey carts and in ambulances, four or five in one ambulance. There was a young woman who got laid up right next to the young boy I was treating. She was 22 or 23 years old, full body surface area burns. And she was unable to speak because she likely had inhalational injury, because the same burns that burned her skin likely burned her airway. And a woman screamed from outside the door, "Hamil, she's pregnant." And so we turned her over quickly because she had come in, lay down on her belly, and somebody put an ultrasound probe on her belly, and she had a viable 18 to 20 week pregnancy. But when we did our secondary survey and tried to understand what other injuries she had a shattered tib fib from an explosive injury. She had burns that covered over 70% of her surface area, which is a death sentence in an environment where you can't find gauze and there isn't clean water and there aren't antibiotics. We all knew what this meant on the ground in the trauma bay the first minutes we met her. She was gonna die there and her baby would die there. And there was nothing we were gonna be able to do about it because the Israeli government and the IDF had made it impossible to care for people to the extent which they deserve. Every human being deserves the right to medical aid in that situation. She was no fighter. She was a pregnant woman who was sitting in her home when a bomb dropped on her head. And she eventually moved to the ICU. And every day she lived until she died, she was in pain. Because we didn't have the kind of medicine we needed to care for her pain. And when wound care came in America, I'd give her two Dilaudid before changing her wound dressings. And there I could give her nothing. And every morning when we'd round, we'd stop by her bed first. and every one of us and the Gazan medical professionals who are heroes that one day will get to be here and tell you their stories themselves so I don't have to tell it for them. We'd all keep our mouths shut and keep the tears held back because we knew we couldn't do anything and we knew the inevitable was coming. Until one day I walked in and the bed was empty. And her story is just one of tens of thousands. And her family mourned for her just like we would mourn for our own family members. And she and every single person in Gaza deserves the dignity and support that humanity as a whole is burdened and has an obligation to provide. I stand here and I'll conclude with this last thought, which is the reason I lose sleep and the reason we cry tears isn't sadness anymore. It's a feeling that we have no ability, despite being from the most powerful country in the world, providing the bombs that drop on these innocent people, that we have no power to stop the bleeding.
I swear, if something like that does not reach you.
Dr. Deborah Harrington, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You've just returned from Gaza. You are an OBGYN, and you went to treat women and children, I guess. What did you see there? Why did you even go?
I went because I've been to Gaza many times. I've been going since 2016 as part of a teaching group. I've never been in a conflict. I've never been in these circumstances. And what I saw was in Al-Aqsa, which is in the middle area, was a hospital that was overwhelmed. It was overwhelmed with numbers of inpatients. It was overwhelmed with emergencies, trauma cases coming in all the time.
Now, note the date, by the way. This is December 27, 2023. So imagine how much worse it is now. In fact, these places have been destroyed, if not flattened entirely, and the places they're left in are also being bombed.
At a level that it simply wasn't set up to deal with. And it had swollen to massive numbers of patients, both inpatients, but also just displaced people. So there were thousands of people taking refuge in the areas around the hospital, in the hospital. Normally there are about 150 in.
Which they went on to bomb and just yelled the word Hamas, and your governments dutifully went along with it.
Patients. And that had swelled, I think, while we were there to about 600 to 700 inpatients, and then another 200 to 300 presenting through the emergency department every day.
So what did you notice most? Are they women, children, men, fighting age, fighters?
So I was expecting in some ways that this was a war situation, and therefore I was sort of anticipating that there were going to be perhaps young men, all sorts of casualties, you know, across the whole spectrum of society. But actually what I overwhelmingly saw was children.
My God, every single person, including a CNN interview with a person who's not even part of a war. I mean, think about how that's even possible without this being exactly what's going on.
It all really started just about a month ago while I was there. In Khan Yunis at Nasser Hospital, the Israeli tanks and the military was inching closer and closer to the hospital and had made its way around the complex of the hospital. And many of the staff then had told me that this was going to unfold. What we're seeing happening now over the course of a week, they had predicted this is exactly what would happen. And they knew that because many of them had been displaced from other hospitals throughout the Gaza Strip. Many of them had come from Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir el-Balah. Many of them had come from Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. And so they had predicted that what would happen is people would be forced to be displaced from around the compound where thousands of people were sheltering, that there would be very intense bombing and shelling. There would be demands for them to leave. There would be threats, just like we saw happened all of last week. And then finally, there would be an assault on the hospital, a raid with troops, and many people would be abducted.
And killed, which is exactly what's happened every single time.
And they even said what would happen during the abduction. They said Israeli troops would clear the hospital floor by floor, and whoever they felt like detaining and abducting, they would take them, and they would be gone anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, and they'd be...
And or longer, realize. There's been people that have been detained for 20 years under no charge, or people that have been detained since October 7th before, or just whatever they decide to, months. And people come out emaciated, tortured, sexually abused. as we all know now,
subjected to humiliation and torture, and they predicted that many people would unnecessarily die. And that's exactly what we heard. I was also able to get an update from Dr. Khalid, the trauma surgeon that you just mentioned. And one of the things that he said in that message was that it was 3 days of hell for patients and for doctors and for staff. He had mentioned that they were essentially asking many of the staff and the patients to keep moving from building to building within the medical complex. He mentioned that, you know, they had to move 65 patients that were bedbound using one elevator to the smallest and oldest building in the compound. And it was him and 20 of the medical staff members that remained while there were 200 patients.
March, when I was in Gaza, I met a patient who was a physician. He had been working in the hospital when the Israeli military initially bombarded the hospital. Then they entered the hospital, instructed all the patients and the staff to leave. My patient insisted that he needed to stay behind to care for his patients, who many of whom couldn't leave. He was then told to strip naked at gunpoint, then held at gunpoint for hours and, in fact, for 2 entire days. He was only allowed to urinate and to defecate on the floor where he stood, beside a puddle of his own urine and feces.
Just realize we're talking about a doc not accused of being Hamas, a doctor who wanted to treat the patient she was already treating in the hospital. And this is what they did. We already have another story that just came out of a doctor being forced to treat the patients, or being allowed to, but only if he was to strip naked first. And he was only allowed to treat them while they were naked. This is just straight up torture and humiliation. That's assuming they didn't get shot afterward.
Fearing for his life at gunpoint for 2 days. He wasn't allowed to access his medications, including his own insulin to treat his diabetes. Eventually, the Israeli military instructed him to care for his patients, who remained there, some of them. But they didn't allow him to dress before they did this. And they laughed because all of his patients were children.
I think about how disgusting that is. So they're making this man completely naked treat little children. I mean, this is a special kind of evil, guys. That's what this needs to be clearly seen as. Not just terrorism. As I've been making clear from the beginning of this, or post October 7th, this is a special kind of evil. It's willful. It's deliberate. They are laughing about it. And I'm talking about the one specifically, not every single Israeli or every Jew. We're talking about Zionism and what they're conducting and what they're proudly allowing and what they've manipulated people into endorsing. And I'm talking about the majority of their population.
I saw him because he developed a terrible heel ulcer from standing at gunpoint for days, then migrating south to Rafah. This man was so traumatized, I honestly can't imagine him ever practicing medicine again. I am an eyewitness, Gaza. Israel is committing genocide, while our leaders remain impotent to act in any meaningful way. We demand an immediate lifting of the blockade of humanitarian aid, an immediate two-way arms embargo, compliance with the decisions of the International Court of Justice. This must be immediate. The children of Gaza depend on it. Justin Trudeau, Melanie Jolie, your inaction is complicity in genocide.
Rage. I'm fueled by a lot of rage.
I was in Gaza working in the ICU in Al-Aqsa Shuhada Hospital for about 3 weeks.
I have been to Gaza twice since.
You've seen them speak already. In the interest of time, I'm going to end with this last one on the segment about the restricted use of munitions. Now, they've all told you. Everyone we've just talked about, they've all now told you that they've seen almost exclusively children shot deliberately while they're playing. I mean, this is a designed effort. Now realize that what they're using to shoot these children is designed to maximize the suffering of these children.
Sidwa, a trauma surgeon who worked at the European hospital, said, "About half of the injuries I took care of were in young kids. We saw a lot of so-called splinter injuries that were very, very small, to the point that you easily miss them while examining a patient. Much, much smaller than anything I've seen before, but they cause tremendous damage on the inside. These weapons appear to be intentionally designed to maximize casualties, according to Amnesty International. 6 foreign doctors who recently served at Gaza's hospitals confirmed the presence of these fragmentation weapons. As Dr. Sidwa explained, children are more vulnerable to any penetrating injury because they have smaller bodies, their vital parts are smaller and easier to disrupt, much smaller blood vessels, which makes them very hard to put back together. Another doctor said that children hit by tiny pieces of shards often died and most of them lost limbs."
So what we're talking about are simply illegal munitions that are, like, for example, butterfly bullets, which is something that Abby Martin has talked about in the past, or known as expanding bullets or dum-dum. They are projectiles designed to expand on impact, causing severe damage to the flesh and the bone. They're illegal because of that. Israel has been shown to repeatedly use these. It says Israel's defense forces used them against Palestinians during the Great March of Return. Even though it was a crime, nobody cared. Nobody got held accountable for it. There was countless children with, you know, limbs blown off for standing out there protesting. I've shown you the clips of them laughing about shooting the children. Not after October 7th. Funny how that works, right? It's disgusting. This is what they're using to hurt and deliberately inflict pain on children. Please share this. Please get people to look at all these different clips of all these different doctors telling you what's going on. Thank you.